The rights lawyers finished the theft. We were left with recounts, dimpled chads, Supremes appointed by Bush's dad. It sure made millions, flaming mad as it started our country slide.
Boom, boom. Something good comes along. Birds in a blue moon. Everything's not going wrong. Well, you get weary, breathing on the same old gong. Once in a blue moon.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A new law went into effect in Virginia Thursday, mandating the weekend. The legislation was originally designed to rid the state of so-called blue laws, setting aside Sunday as a day of rest. The new law threatens employers with a misdemeanor and fines for violation, and it gives employees forced to work on the weekend triple wages. Many Virginia lawmakers say they voted for the bill by mistake during a rush at the end of their last session. They say they plan to repeal the law when the state's General Assembly reconvenes next January.
Citizens in other countries who have their rights infringed upon by American companies can seek justice in U.S. courts, according to a new ruling from the Supreme Court. The case revolved around the Alien Tort Claim Act. The Bush administration argued that the law, instated in 1789, provided no standing for foreigners to recover damages, but a majority of the court disagreed. Valid claims allowed under the act include serious violations of human rights, including slavery, torture, and genocide. There was no corporate defendant in this case, but the Supreme Court's decision is good news for plaintiffs with human rights claims pending before lower courts. One such case involves the Unocal Corporation, which has been accused of working with the Burmese military to round up villagers and force them to help build an oil pipeline, roads, and company buildings.
Having tried all other tactics, the president of Communication Workers Local 1365 decided on Thursday to go on a hunger strike. He's hoping to force telecommunications company Lucent Technologies into paying an estimated $1 million in negotiated financial and pension benefits to 34 workers who will lose their jobs on July 16th. Lucent argues they only agreed to the extra benefits if they outsourced employees. So it says the workers will receive a standard termination package.
ATM users in Philadelphia may have to walk an extra block to make a withdrawal. More than 60 employees of Loomis Fargo have gone on strike and are refusing to service the machines. The strike is being held over contract negotiations and could last throughout the 4th of July weekend. Officials with PNC Bank, the company's largest client, have said that there are plans in place to make sure money is available to customers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least 5 firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
If anyone sees John Kerry, tell him now would not be too soon for him to start standing up like a Democrat. Apparently, he's following his consultant's advice of simply hoping Bush will lose the election rather than trying to win it. These are the same geniuses who advised Al Gore. As a result, Kerry is failing to ignite a massive populist fervor that's readily available to him if he'd only offer a flicker of Democratic spark. Example, why isn't he pounding Bush for the gutting of America's middle class? Take jobs. Bush and the media are gaily hailing the creation of some 600,000 new jobs in the last 2 months, claiming this vindicates Georgia's tax cuts for the rich. Kerry has dully played Bush's game, dourly responding that, well, there are still too many Americans without jobs. But this misses the crucial point, which nearly every working stiff knows personally. The issue is not jobs, it's wages. Indeed, lots of them have two or three jobs, and their paychecks still don't make ends meet. What's steaming folks today is that there are no middle-class jobs for them or their children. Yet, Kerry's consultants caution that he can't appear to be some sort of economic radical. Radical? I'm talking about jobs paying enough to buy a modest house, send the kids to college, provide the family health coverage, and afford a secure retirement. That's not radical. It's Roosevelt. Bush is actively trying to return America to a pre-Roosevelt robber baron era, dismantling the legal framework that offers a middle-class possibility for working families. This is the greatest issue of our time and a stunning political opportunity. But if Kerry won't stand up proudly and loudly now for these families, they're not going to stand up for him in November. This is Jim Hightower saying, Arianna Huffington has an online petition you can sign calling on Kerry to get going and to stand forthrightly as a Democrat. To send Kerry a message, go to fanaticsandfools.org/petition.
You think I'd maybe hide some Bush's phases, maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus and keeping you comfy.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone.
I'm an expert. You're on the job. Don't even think about it, Doc.
Our air conditioners with Puron refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound with a 10-year limited warranty. See dealer for details.
Nothing can stop my dedication. Heat waves, rain, your kid's soccer ball. Ouch. I'm fine. Really.
No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. Carrier, turn to the experts.
When I get one of my headaches, every minute of that pounding, throbbing pain is a minute too long. So when I take something, I want to make sure I choose the one that will get rid of that tough pain faster.
The moment of choice. Tylenol or Advil for faster headache relief. Truth is, Advil liquid gels rush relief to your headache faster than Tylenol. And Advil relief is stronger, better relief too.
Headache's gone already. Glad I chose Advil.
For faster headache relief, advance to Advil Relief.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be, whatever it may be. Good day! It's Friday. Shabbat Shalom, TGIF. Friday, the 2nd of July, in the second hour of our program, we're going to get into the Declaration of Independence. What happened to the people who signed it, and what did they have to say about their complaints against England? And what parallels might there be to this point in time? Interesting. I remember during the Vietnam War, people were going around having people read the Declaration of Independence and ask if they'd sign it. And, you know, having, it was like a candid camera segment, you know, and having people going, this is communist! Anyhow, lots of news for our third hour today. But it is our first hour on Friday, and so time for Brunch with Bernie, one of my favorite segments. I know one of yours. Congressman Bernie Sanders in 1991 became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years to the House of Representatives. He has since been reelected 5 times. He's the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives, America's Congressman Bernie Sanders. Hey, Bernie, welcome to the Tom Hartman program and the Brunch with Bernie segment.
Tom, It is great to be with you.
I am always honored to have you on here, and it was great to see you in person actually last weekend as well. You and Pat Leahy there. You have been watching the news. You've got some. Before we get to that, for those of you who would like to call and talk to a real live congressman who's actually here live and on the phone and enthusiastic about answering your questions and addressing the issues of the day, our toll free number is 1-866-889-8894, and our lines are open right now, 1-866-889-8894. So, Congressman Sanders, what's in the news that's on the top of your mind today?
Well, I tell you, Tom, I think more and more Americans are catching on that there is a war against the middle class, that large corporations are increasingly concerned only about their bottom line, only about the compensation of the top CEOs, and could care less about what happens to working people in this country. There was an article that just appeared yesterday. It was a national AP business writer story by Rachel Conrad. And this is what she said. It really kind of blew me away. Here's what it says, quote, U.S. Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Thomas Donahue urged American companies to send jobs overseas as a way to boost American competitiveness and even increase employment, a stance that rankles jobless workers, particularly in the flagging technology industry.
Urged.
He said Wednesday that exporting high-paid tech jobs to low-cost countries such as India, China, and Russia saves companies money that they may use to create new jobs. He blasted labor leaders and politicians, et cetera, who oppose that.
He urged. He urged. Well, you know, the chambers of commerce, which, you know, maybe times have changed, or maybe I was naive, because back in the 70s, I owned a business in Michigan, and I participated in the local chamber of commerce, and it seemed to me back then, this was like 73 through 76, seemed to me back then that the local chamber of commerce was about advancing the needs of the local businesses. And nowadays, it seems like, I know here in Vermont, the local chamber really seems to be dancing to the tune of big corporations, particularly big multinational corporations. And there's just been this complete change in character ever since, since the Reagan Revolution, you know, since the conservatives took over.
Well, it is, if you just stop and think, here you have a major business leader in America publicly urging companies to go to China and to India.
Yeah.
And then also this week, there are a couple of articles out there which indicate that the new jobs that are being created are primarily low-wage jobs. So what's happening is we're losing good-paying manufacturing jobs. Another article talks about the fact that more finance firms are moving their jobs to India. So you're seeing the exodus of good-paying, high-tech information technology jobs that pay people a middle-class or more salary. You're seeing the loss of manufacturing jobs. And this guy, head of the major business group in America, says, hey, that's a great idea. Let's continue to do it. We've talked about this before, then these guys come running to Washington. You know what they ask for, Tom? They say, hey, help us out.
They want money.
We need billions of dollars, literally. And they get billions of dollars, and then they advertise that they're going to China. So We are working on legislation that would do two things. Number one, we would repeal permanent normal trade relations with China. We have a $120 billion trade deficit with China right now. It's an absurd policy. And second of all, we would stop corporate welfare and we're talking about billions of dollars a year for those companies that are running abroad, and use that money to help smaller and medium-sized companies in America that want to create decent-paying jobs in this country.
Yeah.
But the crisis, the economic crisis, is not just too high unemployment. The real economic crisis is the collapse of the middle class in terms of the loss of decent-paying manufacturing and information technology jobs, jobs that provide people with decent benefits, health care, pensions, and as a replacement, the Walmart-type jobs that provide people with low wages and minimal benefits. That's the transition of the American economy, and it is incredible to me that a major, major business leader would actually stand up, not apologize, not defend, but actually urge companies to sell out the middle class of this country.
Yeah. Well, it is consistent with the conservative agenda. I mean, our quote for the day, for example, Karl Rove has been on record as saying that he admired McKinley's administration and wanted to replicate that with Bush's. And here's Grover Cleveland, who preceded Kinley in 1885. He was president from 85 to 89. In his first inaugural, he said, and I quote, our thought for the day, as we view the achievements of aggregated capital, we discover the existence of trusts, combinations, and monopolies, while the citizen is struggling far in the rear or is trampled to death beneath an iron heel. Corporations, which should be the carefully restrained creatures of the law and the servants of the people, are fast becoming the people's masters. And
if that was true 100-some-odd years ago, it is doubly true now.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was that period of the Gilded Age, you know, from 1880 to 1930, when there was no American middle class. The robber mm-hmm. barons had wiped it out, and you know, conservative trickle down economics was the way of the day. And these guys want to bring it back.
They certainly do. I mean, they want to repeal every gain that working people in the middle class have made in the last 100 years, bring us back precisely to that period when workers had no legal protections, elderly people had no protections, the sick had no protection, children had no protection. That's where they want to go. And I think American workers better wake up to that fact and fight back as hard as we can.
Yeah, and this is not conservative. This is radical. I mean, this goes way beyond anything ever Dirksen would have ever thought of.
Absolutely. No question about it. I mean, people should not think that you have a conservative president. You don't. You have a right-wing extremist president, and the evidence is just overwhelming. Here is a guy, conservatives are supposed to be fiscally responsible, correct? Here's a guy who's run up a national debt now to $7 trillion while he's giving huge tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires. Conservatives are supposed to believe in states' rights and local control, and here are these people every single day passing legislation, including No Child Left Behind legislation, which overrides state and local initiatives. So these are not conservatives. These are radical extremists.
Yeah, increasingly. Our number 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on with Congressman Sanders. Bernie, there in the news, a couple of other things in the news that I just wanted to get your take on. Richard Egan, a billionaire with a B, who historically has been a major supporter of the Bush campaign and one of the larger contributors to the Bush campaign. He and his wife and his son and his daughter-in-law have all given the maximum individual campaign contribution to not the Bush campaign this year, but to the Ralph Nader campaign. In addition, Egan, who was sent to Ireland as the U.S. ambassador by President Bush after his fundraising successes in the 2000 campaign, he's just unabashed about it. He says, he's supporting Nader not because of what Nader says, but because Nader can help Bush defeat Kerry. And this watch group, dog group in Washington D.C. has filed this complaint, and the Republican or the Nader spokesman Kevin Zeese says, there's no evidence of us doing anything wrong in Oregon. What are your thoughts on
that? Well, here's the story. What was going on in Oregon, as best as I can figure out, is that active members of the Republican Party, how far up it went, we don't know, were urging people to come to a meeting where Nader needed a certain number of signatures in order to get on the ballot. And it was very clear they were on the telephone. I guess they were sending out emails. And as Republicans, essentially what they were saying is, if we can get Nader on the ballot in Oregon, this will take votes away from Kerry. It will make it easier for the president to win Oregon. And now you're telling me that a billionaire is also contributing to Kerry's campaign. And I think people should hear that very, very carefully and understand that increasingly what Nader's campaign is about, at least as understood by Republicans and quite correctly, is that a vote for Ralph Nader means that it's that much more likely that George Bush will be elected. And I think we've got to do everything we can, and I intend to stop that. This election, as I've said on this show more than once, is not about John Kerry. To be very honest with you, I've got a lot of problems with Kerry's positions on a number of issues. But this election is not about Kerry. It is about George Bush, the most reactionary president in the modern history of this country. And if people think the last 4 years have been bad, in my view, if he is reelected, the next 4 years will be even more extreme and even worse. And I think we've got to focus on defeating Bush and electing Kerry in order to stop that.
Yeah. The next president is probably going to nominate half the Supreme Court, for example. When you use the word reactionary, you know, which is a word that folks on the left use a lot, I think a lot of average listeners don't understand what you mean by that.
Well, what I mean by that is that you have a guy who is working night and day for the wealthiest people in this country. In terms of, in my view, if he is reelected, what you're going to see is a move toward the privatization of Social Security, privatization of Medicare, cutbacks on the rights of labor unions and working people, cutbacks in Medicaid, move toward the privatization of the Veterans Administration. So what you're seeing is a guy, what people should imagine, if you were rich and powerful, if you wanted to make it easier to take jobs abroad, pollute the environment, exploit your workers, generally speaking, those will be the ideas that President Bush will be advocating increasingly, in my view, if he's reelected.
Yeah, and has been all along. I mean, let's right. just... It's...
But if you think it's bad now, when he doesn't have to come before the people again, he can be even more extreme.
Yeah. Assuming that we can't get at least the House or the Senate to balance him, do you think there's any possibility of either one? We got about 15 seconds here.
Yes, I do. There's a lot of evidence now that there's strong grassroots discontent with the Republican Party. There is a reasonable shot the Democrats can regain the Senate, and a less reasonable chance, but a possibility of regaining the House.
That would be great. I think people forget how important that is.
Oh, believe me.
Yeah. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program Brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders, our regular Friday afternoon guest. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Has George W. Bush delivered on his 2000 campaign pledge to run the government more like a business? New reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and Office of Personnel Management show that the federal workforce grew by a net 70,000 since Bush took office. And these numbers don't even count contractors who now compete for federal work. Of the 12 million people who work in some capacity for the federal government, less than 2 million are actually employed by government agencies.
Do you You want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 25 and a half minutes. No, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on the Congressman Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders, our guest on our regular Friday afternoon segment. And Congressman Sanders, I've got a couple of questions here for you that have come via the chat room. Plus, we've got a couple of people on the line. Let's go to the folks on the line first. 1-866-889-8894. 866, one of those newfangled toll-free numbers, if you'd like to call in. 1-866-889-8894. And let's go to Kevin in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Kevin, you're live and on the air with Tom Hartman and Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Tom and Congressman, hi. I have really two comment on. One was I saw that the job reports came out today. You actually were talking a little about this earlier, I guess. And that it was less than half of what they were projecting, just a little over 100,000 new jobs. And also, they actually downed the number of jobs from April and May. I don't know if you were aware of that, that there weren't as many created as they were saying. I don't know what the new number is, but it was downsized. And the second thing I'd like to comment on is, yesterday, a court in Florida ordered the state to release all the names of the projected felons to be removed from the list in a suit brought by CNN, ABC, and the ACLU, and the and that they couldn't remove any names unless they were 100% certain that person was the felon, and that the right to vote had to be protected. And the Secretary of State here said that she would comply with the order. They didn't say anything about appealing it. So that, I just wanted to bring those two things up.
Those are important points, Kevin. Thank you. In terms of the job reports, what you're saying is very important. Bush has a hard time understanding why poll after poll shows that the American people are very anxious and concerned about the economy. He said, well, look at all these new jobs, hundreds of thousands of new jobs. Well, you're making one point. First of all, there are not as many new jobs as they say. We have still lost jobs since Bush has been president. But equally important, look at the quality of the jobs being created. Do they pay as much as the jobs that we are losing? And the answer is, big time, no. We're losing good-paying manufacturing jobs. We're losing good-paying information technology jobs. We're creating low-paying service industry jobs by and large. The second point that you raise is a huge, huge issue, this thing about Florida and felons and so forth. I think most people now understand that the real story about Florida 2000 was not the hanging chads and what happened after the election. It was, in fact, what happened before the election and the effort of the Jeb Bush administration to deny tens of thousands of Floridians, mostly African Americans, their voting rights. And I'm glad that there is a major effort underway right now to make sure that that does not happen again. Greg Pabst wrote a book on this, and Michael Moore picked up on it but it is outrageous,
yeah,
absolutely outrageous how they kept African Americans from the polling booths.
Yeah, it's interesting. People for American for the American Way has posted on their website that list from Florida. I just went and looked at. There's six Hartmans on the list. I'm inclined to call them up and see if any of my relatives are being dissed down in Florida.
Well, you know what they were doing. If you know Thomas B. Hartman was a felon, Thomas C. Hartman didn't get the right to vote.
There you go. Yeah, which is me, by the way. Hence, so that's a spooky thing. Yeah, this is you know the old quote that's attributed to Stalin. It's not who votes that matters; it's who counts the votes. What we've discovered in 2000 is that it even goes beyond that. It's who allows whom to vote.
Yeah. Right.
And that's a huge one. Yeah, well, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, the only independent member of the House of Representatives. He's been a congressman, been reelected five times, been a congressman since 1991. Congressman Sanders will continue to take your calls right after this break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. More than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A new law went into effect in Virginia Thursday mandating the weekend. The legislation was originally designed to rid the state of so-called blue laws, setting aside Sunday as a day of rest. The new law threatens employers with a misdemeanor and fines for violation, and it gives employees forced to work on the weekend triple wages. Many Virginia lawmakers say they voted for the bill by mistake during a rush at the end of their last session. They say they plan to repeal the law when the state's General Assembly reconvenes next January.
Citizens in other countries who have their rights infringed upon by American companies can seek justice in U.S. courts, according to a new ruling from the Supreme Court. The case revolved around the Alien Tort Claim Act. The Bush administration argued that the law, instated in 1789, provided no standing for foreigners to recover damages, but a majority of the court disagreed. Valid claims allowed under the act include serious violations of human rights, including slavery, torture, and genocide. There was no corporate defendant in this case, but the Supreme Court's decision is good news for plaintiffs with human rights claims pending before lower courts. One such case involves the Unocal Corporation, which has been accused of working with the Burmese military to round up villagers and force them to help build an oil pipeline, roads, and company buildings.
Having tried all other tactics, the president of Communication Workers Local 1365 decided on Thursday to go on a hunger strike. He's hoping to force telecommunications company Lucent Technologies into paying an estimated $1 million in negotiated financial and pension benefits to 34 workers who will lose their jobs on July 16th. Lucent argues they only agreed to the extra benefits if they outsourced employees, so it says the workers will receive a standard termination package.
ATM users in Philadelphia may have to walk an extra block to make a withdrawal. More than 60 employees of Loomis Fargo have gone on strike and are refusing to service the machines. The strike is being held over contract negotiations and could last throughout the 4th of July weekend. Officials with PNC Bank, the company's largest client, have said that there are plans in place to make sure money is available to customers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's just time to pay the price, not listening to advice, deciding in your youth.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. It's 27 minutes before the hour. It's Brunch with Bernie, our regular weekly segment with Congressman Bernie Sanders, the first hour of our Friday program. And Congressman Sanders, we've got several calls here. Let's go to the lines. Gary in Indianapolis is on the line. Hey, Gary, welcome. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders and Tom Hartman.
Yeah, how you doing? I was going to ask Bernie, what are they going to do about the voting machines there?
Good question. When we talk about the election, it's not just Florida. There's growing concern about these touchscreen machines that are being used all over this country. And I think, Tom, as you and I have discussed, and I know you've been focusing on this issue a lot, I think there is a growing belief that this technology is not just there yet, that we should not be moving as fast as we are, that for the first time, in fact, you're going to have private companies like Diebold and some others who have proprietary knowledge about how these machines work rather than secretaries of states or town clerks. It's a dangerous trend. I know in California now, the Secretary of State, as I recall, has taken action against Diebold. In Congress, some of us are working with Rush Holt of New Jersey to pass legislation that would mandate that any touchscreen machine kick back a paper ballot as well, so we could keep track.
But isn't Tom DeLay blocking that, Bernie?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the problem, Gary.
That
thanks.
That goes
for
without
the
saying. I would assume that people would know that. Yes.
Yeah.
Any serious piece of legislation on the floor of the House is going to be blocked by Tom DeLay and the right-wing Republicans.
Incredible. Incredible. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. A quick question, Shelby, who manages our web stream on radiopower.org, which is how we're heard all over the planet today. Shelby sent an instant message to our producer here. Louise said, can you ask Tom to ask Bernie what he thinks about the election official that Tom quoted yesterday? Yesterday I quoted the guy that last year George W. Bush appointed to be the head of the Federal Election Commission. And this guy said, we need to immediately come up with plans for how to postpone elections in the event of a terrorist attack, so that if we have a terrorist attack just before the election like they did in Spain, we won't then hold the election immediately thereafter and have it be affected or influenced by that terrorist attack.
I think that's a very bad idea. And I think the people in Spain are getting a lot of unfortunate attacks. The Socialist Party, which won in Spain, campaigned from beginning to end of that campaign to bring their troops home, which is what they did. And a lot of the outrage that took place in Spain was not just in response to the bombing, the terrible bombing which killed some 300 people. It was the lies of the conservative government that tried to cast blame on a nationalist group as opposed to another type of group.
Well, plus
I think this is a bad idea, what this guy is talking about.
Yeah, I agree. It concerns me. I mean, anybody talking about suspending elections, I mean, that's just, it's spooky.
You got it.
It's
you just got it. Not something
spooky
we will pay attention to.
Yeah, and the thing in Spain, by the way, you know, just for the record, is that the polls before the bombing were actually showing that the socialists were either neck and neck or ahead, depending on which poll you looked at. So,
and the line that comes from the Bush administration, those terrible Spanish people were cowardly and they kowtowed to Al-Qaeda, and that's just not true at all.
No, it's not. They voted actually the way that they had been intending to vote in any case. One quick question, Bernie, before we go to the next call. You mentioned the voting machines. I'm curious if it's common knowledge on Capitol Hill that Senator Chuck Hagel, before he ran for the Senate, was the president of ES&S, which is the second largest of the voting machine companies behind Diebold, that as president of ES&S, he got those machines installed all across his state of Nebraska. Prior to that, he had spent 20 years in Washington, D.C., working for George Herbert Walker Bush. Came to to Nebraska, became president of ES&S, got his machines all across, resigned his job. Just a few months later, ran for the United States Senate against an incumbent Democratic governor who was the odds-on favorite, and in what was referred to and won primaries that nobody expected him to win, and won a general election that was referred to by the Washington Post as the upset election of the entire year for the entire nation. Nobody expected this unknown businessman, and he was the guy who, you know, just months earlier had been president of the voting machine that owned the voting machine company that owned the voting machines on which all those people were voting, and still owns apparently stock in that company. And this was just outed in the Hill about 6-8 months ago, and I talked to the reporter who was going to, you know, do the story, and Hagel had sent lawyers in to threaten him about it. I mean, is this common knowledge on the Hill, his history?
I don't think it's common knowledge, but it is, you know, some of us do know that.
Yeah.
And the issue here, which is unprecedented, not just with Hagel or Diebold, is that what we are doing for the first time is giving the knowledge about how the machinery works as proprietary information to private sector people and not to the public.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's unique, and I think a very dangerous a trend, which is unacceptable.
Yeah, the vote should be part of the commons, and the commons is the stuff that we, the people, collectively
right,
own,
right.
And it shouldn't be owned independently. Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and I believe this is Dave in Eureka, California.
Thank you both.
Am I right? Yes. Hey, Dave.
Yes, thank you both for being who you are at a frightful time like this. So much deception from this administration. To name two, the economy, when you average in how really well the mega millionaires and billionaires are doing, they offset the millions of people now on minimum wage who can't afford to pay rent or health insurance. And if you average those in, though, it looks like the economy overall is doing well. If you fail to renew people's unemployment insurance, you then can declare that they're no longer unemployed, and that's what this administration is doing. One more curiosity for you, Bernie. Have you had a chance to see Fahrenheit 9/11?
Not yet. My wife and I may actually see it tonight if the place is not sold out.
Like you, that is another hope for America.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. It is. We had Michael Moore up in Burlington a few years ago, and he was great. And this movie is playing a very, very important role, I think, in waking up people to some of the things that are going on.
And Bernie, I think you're going to find it surprisingly kind of middle of the road. Actually, it's like a well done documentary. Anyhow, Dave, what was your point or your question?
Well, that was pretty much it.
Well, Dave made two important points.
I think that if you average in the billionaire's income with the poor, that comes out to where it looks like the economy is doing well. It's not
well,
doing
Dave,
well for the overall.
Your point is well taken, because very often what the Bush administration does is exactly play that trick. So if you're a billionaire and I'm broke, on average we're worth $500 million apiece, right?
Yeah, it's like
that's pretty good.
It's the old Bill
but
Gates walks into
I'm
the bar.
Broke. So that people should be very thoughtful when they look at these statistics about averaging. On average, the American people received a certain tax break. Well, some people received millions. Some people received $100. Add them together and divide by two, it's a pretty high number.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Dave is talking about, and he's right. And the second point that Dave made, which is also absolutely right, is when we look at unemployment statistics, people should know how those statistics are developed. For example, if you are living in a community where unemployment is 10, 15, 18%, you have given up actively looking for work, you are not part of that statistic. You are not actively seeking employment, therefore you're not added up. Second of all, if you're working at a part-time job when you want to be working full-time, you are not counted as unemployed. You are employed. Thirdly, if you have a PhD and you're driving a taxi cab, well, that's the way life goes. You're employed as well. Add all those things together, and the unemployment statistics actually are quite a bit higher than the 5 or 6%, which the officials say that it is today.
Yeah. Plus, isn't there just a time thing that, I mean, you can continue to be looking for a job, but if it's more than a year or 18 months after you were laid off, then at that point they no longer count you as unemployed.
I'm not sure about that one.
Yeah, okay. I'm not either. I don't have the details here. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Quickly, Bernie, there's two other things. When David Stockman was with Reagan, he wanted to use five indicators instead of just the medium income and the average, because they're so capable of being so deceptive to the people. When you use median as an example and average, it's just they're almost useless. But anyway, gentlemen, can I read something real quick about outsourcing? It won't take long.
If it's less than two sentences.
Well,
why don't you just tell us what it says, Armin?
Well, let me just read the first part, and then if you stop me, you can, but it's really not that long. I call this outsourcing. When they came for the TV maker's job, I didn't care. I still had mine. When he lost his health insurance, I didn't care. I still had mine. When they came for the auto worker's job, I didn't care. I still had mine. When they came for the high-tech worker's job, I didn't care. I still had mine. When he lost his health insurance, I didn't care. I still had mine. When they came for my job in health insurance, nobody cared because nobody had cared about them. If Congress really believes in outsourcing, why didn't it start with them? After all, they're supposed to be public servants, and 90% of the people that pay their salary make less than they do.
Okay.
Well, Armin raises a very good question. During the NAFTA debate, I must tell Armin, he's absolutely right, I mean, for a number of reasons. During the NAFTA debate, what I introduced legislation, actually, I really did, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, and I said, well, if NAFTA is going to drive down the wages of American workers, clearly, and if the goal is to have American workers equal Mexican workers long-term, well, maybe the President of the United States should receive the same salary in American dollars as the President of Mexico does, which would have been a substantial reduction in his salary. I didn't get a lot of votes for that legislation, but I thought it was a pretty good idea.
Yeah, it's making the point. And the larger point, I think, really is how many of our elected officials are not acting in the interests of we the people. They're not representing the historic ideals of democracy. They're simply representing, they view as a constituency, I'm the pharmaceutical company guy, or
right.
I'm the...
Well, interestingly, picking up on Armin's point, I think tonight on the Bill Moyer show, if I'm not mistaken, I'm going to have a segment on there. What we try to do is have Congress adopt what we call cash balance conversion pension plans. Move away from the pension plans that Congress now has to what they want American workers to have. And that means if you're an older worker, you'll see an up to a 50% reduction in your pension. Needless to say, that idea didn't go over in Congress terribly well as well.
You mean the Congress that is controlled by the Republicans is refusing to put into place for itself what they want to foist upon the rest of us?
You got it. That is exactly right. So I thought if it was good enough for the American worker, surely it would be good enough for members of Congress, even if they lost half of their pensions. What the hell? If it's good for the American worker, why not for the leaders of the country?
Yeah, there you go.
Somehow that idea also did not go over terribly well.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
I don't know why either. It's 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Jane in Virginia, is on the line. Hey, Jane, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah, you know, I'm always happy when the congressman is on because he says the things that I used to remember they were saying years ago in Congress. And one of the things that I wondered about, does Congress have a rule that they give themselves the salary, raise their salary, is it every year or every other year?
In Congress,
I remember, huh?
What Congress does, Jane, is unless it is stopped, there is an automatic COLA increase.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, not per se a new salary, but it goes up by a cost of living increase, 2 or 3% or whatever.
Yeah, like they do. But the Congress gets 2.5% on their retirement, isn't that right, or is it more?
On their retirement, 2.5%. Well, Congress has a defined retirement plan, which is a reasonably good plan. And it has to do with the number of years you serve and the salary you get.
Yeah, but it is not what these. There are these emails running around among the right wing crazies saying that congressmen are going to retire with tens of millions of dollars in their
right.
No, what had happened? I know I've seen that email, and that's not quite correct. What happened is, before I was looking, I think in the 80s, there in fact was a pension plan for members of Congress which was very, very, very generous. The plan that's now in effect is a good plan for sure, but it is not off the wall. So they changed that in the 80s.
What I want to ask also is it used to be that they would give the employees of the congressmen a raise also, but then the Congress stopped that because what happened, the Congress decided to give each Congress member as much money as they needed, and if they wanted to give the raise to their employees, they could, but if they didn't want to, they just kept the money.
No, that's not accurate, Jane. What you are given is a budget, and you have flexibility as there is a maximum number of people that you can hire, and you can decide within your own budget how much you want to pay employees who work for you. But it's no member of Congress puts that money in his own pocket. What you don't spend, you give back.
Interesting. Jane, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Thank you very much. Bernie, we've got about a minute and a half here before the break. Drug companies have repeatedly overcharged public hospitals and clinics. Maybe you saw this in the news yesterday, $41.4 billion. But the Bush administration says that although it agrees with the ruling, quote, it does not want to ask Congress for authority to impose fines or other penalties against the drug companies.
Well,
Why would you want
to impose fines on people who are ripping off the taxpayers, who are ripping off consumers, when they contribute so much to the Republican Party and to President Bush's reelection effort? It would be very rude, don't you think, Tom? I mean, if somebody contributes millions and millions of dollars to you and then you fine them?
Yeah, this is
what kind of gratitude is that?
This is like one of the first points Moore makes in the movie that I hope you have an opportunity to see tonight. That over the years the Bin Laden family has contributed in direct and indirect fashion $1.4 billion to the Bush family, and we wonder why all these Bin Laden relatives got flown out of the United States. It's the same thing. Yeah, good. Well said, Bernie. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down, and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
No Sweat Apparel sold $150,000 worth of 100% union-made t-shirts, jeans, and athletic wear last year, and today they're launching a new product hoping to shake up an industry. It's a shoe, actually a line of Converse lookalikes made by unionized workers in Jakarta, Indonesia. On Wednesday, No Sweat Apparel rolled out its new activist-themed line of sneakers. The first special edition sneaker is a code pink high top, in partnership with the DC-based feminist anti-war group. Workers earn wages 25% higher than the regional minimum wage. All workers receive a rice allowance based on family size and are given 100% health insurance, travel, maternity, burial, clothing, and retirement benefits. Mark Levinson is the chief economist at the textile workers union Unite.
It shows that the companies can produce union-made goods around the world, and this is what our international work has been trying to do, to support unions in the United States and around the world to stop the brutal race to the bottom.
One thing that makes these shoes special is the fact sheet inside the box of the wages and benefits paid to the lowest paid worker. Adam Neiman, co-founder and chief executive of No Sweat Apparel, traveled to Nike headquarters to present Philip Knight with a free pair of sneakers and demand that Nike follow No Sweat's lead.
And they were very nice and they were very nervous. And she said, oh, we can't possibly do this. We have sneakers in warehouses. Sometimes they sit there for 6 months to a year. And they said, Caitlin, all you have to do is put a date on the thing and a disclaimer saying that this information is accurate as of this date. Well, she had no answer for that.
Neiman has a long way to go before there's a world without sweatshops, but he's stitching together a vision one step at a time. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
The official marching song of the Bush administration. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our first hour for Friday afternoon. And as always, and Congressman Sanders, just, you know, this is the 4th of July weekend. And the people who signed the Declaration of Independence on the 4th of July put their lives on the line. Many of them lost their lives as a direct result of having signed that document. Almost all of them lost their fortunes or their families in various ways. What can be done to rekindle that kind of patriotism or activity, interactivity, love of, you know, love of politics in America?
Well, Tom, I mean, that's a beautiful and important question to ask on the July 4th weekend. And I think the answer is to be a real patriot, to be a real lover of this great country, means to do all that we can to involve people in the political process. It is a national disgrace that we have the lowest voter turnout of any major country on earth. And just think, if every listener to this show said, I am going to register or make sure that three or four people who otherwise would not be voting will vote, that can play a profound role on the election.
Yeah.
It's important that we talk to people who disagree with us. It's important that we make people understand that we are dishonoring Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and John Adams and all of these guys if you do not pay attention to the political process. Now, I know a lot of right-wing people and big-money people say, oh, politics is crap, don't get involved. That's a scam. They are involved. They contribute huge sums of money. But the mythology out there is that working people, low-income people, should not participate in the political process. So I think to love the country, to honor the country, to remember our history, those very brave people who gave up their fortunes and their families, put their lives on the line, is to say, you know what, in a democratic society, I'm going to be involved in the process. I'm going to fight for health care for all people. I'm going to see that the middle class is expanding, not shrinking. I'm concerned about the growing disparity between the rich and the poor. I'm concerned about a unilateral foreign policy, which has earned us so much enmity all over the world. And even if you don't agree with that, get involved in the political process. That is how you honor the American tradition.
Amen. That's very well said, and I hope our listeners today will take it to heart, and that you who are listening to my voice right now or our voices right now will make a commitment to make sure that two or three of your friends or acquaintances or family members who are not registered to vote will get registered to vote, and that they'll get to the polls. Bernie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A new law went into effect in Virginia Thursday mandating the weekend. The legislation was originally designed to rid the state of so-called blue laws, setting aside Sunday as a day of rest. The new law threatens employers with a misdemeanor and fines for violation, and it gives employees forced to work on the weekend triple wages. Many Virginia lawmakers say they voted for the bill by mistake during a rush at the end of their last session. They say they plan to repeal the law when the state's General Assembly reconvenes next January.
Citizens in other countries who have their rights infringed upon by American companies can seek justice in U.S. courts, according to a new ruling from the Supreme Court. The case revolved around the Alien Tort Claims Act. The Bush administration argued that the law, instated in 1789, provided no standing for foreigners to recover damages, but a majority of the court disagreed. Valid claims allowed under the act include serious violations of human rights, including slavery, torture, and genocide. There was no corporate defendant in this case, but the Supreme Court's decision is good news for plaintiffs with human rights claims pending before lower courts. One such case involves the Unocal Corporation, which has been accused of working with the Burmese military to round up villagers and force them to help build an oil pipeline, roads, and company buildings.
Having tried all other tactics, the president of Communication Workers Local 1365 decided on Thursday to go on a hunger strike. He's hoping to force telecommunications company Lucent Technologies into paying an estimated $1 million in negotiated financial and pension benefits to 34 workers who will lose their jobs on July 16th. Lucent argues they only agreed to the extra benefits if they outsourced employees, so it says the workers will receive a standard termination package.
ATM users in Philadelphia may have to walk an extra block to make a withdrawal. More than 60 employees of Loomis Fargo have gone on strike and are refusing to service the machines. The strike is being held over contract negotiations and could last throughout the 4th of July weekend. Officials with PNC Bank, the company's largest client, have said that there are plans in place to make sure money is available to customers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least 5 firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Well, well, the hammer is getting nailed. The hammer is Tom DeLay's nickname. He's the Republican House Majority Leader who's notorious for hammering corporate lobbyists, demanding that they give millions of dollars in campaign funds for him and other Republicans. DeLay, the most powerful man in Congress, controls the flow of legislation, and he's not subtle about telling lobbyists that they must pay if they want their bills to move. Now, Representative Chris Bell has nailed the hammer with an extensive ethics complaint. The Houston Democrat accuses DeLay of bribery, extortion, fraud, money laundering, and the abuse of power. He cites the case of Westar Energy Corporation, which in 2002 wanted a self-serving provision written into an energy bill. In an internal corporate email, a Westar executive wrote that, quote, "To get a seat at the table, the company must donate $25,000 in soft money to DeLay." The executive bluntly said, "His agreement is necessary before the House conferees can push the language we have in place in the House bill." Sure enough, Westar's special break was put in the bill once the money was delivered. In typical style, DeLay has launched a venal counterattack, calling his accuser a bitter partisan. He even trotted out House Speaker Dennis Hastert to declare that the very filing of the charges against DeLay denigrates what ethics is all about. Huh? Ethics is about not being corrupt. For example, not using the power of your public office to do favors in exchange for cash. It's DeLay's corruption that's denigrating, not the fact that Chris Bell has the temerity to call him on it. Also, one of DeLay's top lieutenants has threatened that Republicans are going to have to respond in kind, declaring that he would retaliate by filing ethics charges against unnamed Democratic leaders. "You kill my dog," he wailed, "I'll kill your cat." This is Jim Hightower saying at least he's admitting that DeLay is a dog.
You think I'd maybe hide some Bush's phases? Maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus and keeping you comfy.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone.
I'm an expert. You're on the job. Don't even think about it, Doc.
Our air conditioners with Puron refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound with a 10-year limited warranty. See dealer for details.
Nothing can stop my dedication. Heat waves, rain, your kid's soccer ball. Ouch. I'm fine, really.
No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. Carrier, turn to the experts.
When I get one of my headaches, every minute of that pounding, throbbing pain is a minute too long. So when I take something, I want to make sure I choose the one that will get rid of that tough pain faster.
The moment of choice. Tylenol or Advil for faster headache relief. Truth is, Advil liquid gels rush relief to your headache faster than Tylenol. And Advil relief is stronger, better relief too.
Headache's gone already. Glad I chose Advil.
For faster headache relief, advance to Advil.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border. When in the course of human events, Thomas Jefferson wrote, back in June of 1776, the first signature affixed on July 4th, this Sunday, It was written by Thomas Jefferson in first draft. It was edited lightly, actually. Probably the major editing was taking out an entire paragraph in there that Jefferson had put in, accusing the king of foisting slavery on the United States. And they took that out because they didn't want to offend the southern states. But Jefferson had fought slavery, legally fought, even though he was a slaveholder. His first act as a member of the Virginian legislature was to propose a law banning slavery. But that's a whole other discussion for another time. But anyhow, July 4th weekend coming up. And so I thought it would be useful to actually revisit the document in a way that brings it to today, that makes it current. And so I'm going to read to you much of the Declaration of Independence and make a few comments about it. And then I want to tell you what I think is the most fascinating story, which is the story of what happened to the people who signed it. Anyhow, here it is, July 4th, 1776. These brilliant words written in large part by Thomas Jefferson. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bonds which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Makes sense. So what are the causes? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. You'll recall the cons, you know. Governments don't fix the problem. Government is the problem, right? Ronald Reagan's famous saying. No, I'm sorry, Mr. Reagan. Not in America. Maybe in the Soviet Union. Not in America. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its power in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. He goes on to talk about how, you know, we've put up with a lot here. We've put up with a lot, and we've kept our silence, and we cannot do that any longer. He goes on to talk about how, you know, we've put up with a lot here. We've put up with a lot, and we've kept our silence, and we cannot do that any longer, because the evils are no longer sufferable. He says, but when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. What has the king done to justify this extraordinary act of separation from a nation, this ultimate political involvement? Well, Jefferson wrote, he has refused his assent to laws he thinks himself above the law. Sort of like in March of 2002 when Alberto Gonzalez, the White House counsel, wrote, "The President of the United States is not bound by United States laws or international treaties because we have entered a new type of war." Back to Jefferson. "He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance." We just heard from Bernie Sanders how a majority of the members of Congress have now signed on for Rush Holt's law that would require that voting machines produce ballots, printed ballots. And yet Tom DeLay, no doubt at the urging of the White House, will not allow this to come to the floor for a vote. This one of, you know, I could give you a long example. The longtime listeners know. Back to Jefferson. "He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodations of large districts of people. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the repository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures." Fatiguing them into compliance. Recall the Medicare bill passed at 5 o'clock in the morning, that the vote was opened at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was the first time in the 227-year history of the House of Representatives that it had taken more than 15 minutes for a vote. It took 3 hours. As Denny Hastert was running around, twisting arms, making threats, offering bribes, apparently, to Nick Smith of Michigan. Back to Jefferson. "He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing his manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their office." And now we find, although he said during the campaign that there would be absolutely no litmus test, quote unquote, for federal judges beyond competence, we find that candidates for federal judgeships are being asked for whom they have voted in the last 20 years. They're being asked about their political activities. They're being asked about their positions on things like abortion, stem cell, the rights of corporations. Back to Jefferson. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people. In case you Back to Jefferson. "He has affected to render the military..." Oh, and under the Patriot Act, of course, they can now sneak into your home without a warrant, sneak and peek provisions. They can listen into your telephone conversations without telling you, without even any evidence that you've committed a crime, without having to go before a judge and prove probable cause. Back to Jefferson. "He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power." This is an interesting one. I'd say we haven't gone quite that far, unless you say, okay, the civil power is supposed to be the president, and he's supposed to be representing us. And see, the big check and balance thing in our government has been that the military would be under the command of a civilian, so that you wouldn't have the situation like so many countries have faced in the past, where the military rose up and took over the nation. And I'd say, you know, what's going on now is not so much with this, what Jefferson was complaining about, that the military was over the civil government in the United States, the British military, but rather almost the reverse, that our military is being exploited and abused by those who have been given the sacred trust. Continuing with Jefferson. For depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury. This is one of the reasons why we separated from England. For depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury. Thank God the Supreme Court just said, no, George III, you can't do that anymore. Sorry. It's against the law. For transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses. Like Guantanamo. Or like giving prisoners to the Saudis, knowing that their interrogation techniques are somewhat unique. Every Friday afternoon, you know, they have public beheadings and public hand-cutting offs and arm and foot-cutting offs of thieves and stonings and beheadings of those guilty of the capital crimes in Saudi Arabia, of blasphemy, homosexuality, and murder. Back to Jefferson. For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government. And if you think this is not happening right now, you have not been paying attention. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages and totally unworthy of the head of a civilized nation. The second largest army in Iraq, mercenaries. Armed, quote, private contractors, end quote, doing, quote, security work, end quote. American mercenaries. 20 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman, July 4th special.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life.
To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. And three quarters. Time is moving along. Back in 1936, talking about the rise of corporate power. Well, first let me give you our quote for the day. This is from President Grover Cleveland. He said it in 1886, his first presidential address. He was president from 1885 to 1889. He said, "As we view the achievements of aggregated capital, we discover the existence of trust combinations and monopolies, while the citizen is struggling far in the rear or is trampled to death beneath an iron heel. Corporations, which should be the carefully restrained creatures of the law and the servants of the people, are fast becoming the people's masters." Now, why this quote in the context of this discussion we've been having? Well, back in 1936... looking at the tail end of this period that Grover Cleveland was talking about, keep in mind, Cleveland was president at the very beginning of the Gilded Age, when conservative economics were first seizing America as you know, these huge corporations, what the robber barons, the Carnegies, the Rockefellers, the Morgan, J.P. Morgan, and so on. Were rising up using the corporate form to aggregate wealth that had never been seen before in the United States. Literally had never been seen before. And they tried to slow it down with the Sherman Antitrust Act. They said, this is anti-competitive, this is anti-American, this is destructive. And a number of presidents spoke out about it, Grover Cleveland among them. And it reached its peak in 1929. Having wiped out the farmer middle class by large corporations coming in and manipulating the prices of farm produce and controlling monopolies on the shipment of it because the railroads had become so powerful. And so Franklin Roosevelt, looking back at this, in the speech he gave in July of 1936, he says, "That very word freedom, it's in itself and of necessity, suggests freedom from some restraining power. In 1776, we sought freedom from the tyranny of a political autocracy, from the 18th century royalists who held special privileges from the crown. It was to perpetuate their privilege that they governed without the consent of the governed, and that they denied the right of free assembly and free speech, that they just restricted the worship of God, and that they put the average man's property and the average man's life in pawn to the mercenaries of dynastic power, that they regimented the people. And so it was, to win freedom from the tyranny of political autocracy, that the American Revolution was fought." And then he goes on to talk about how since that battle, times have changed, new forms have emerged. He said, for out of this modern civilization, economic royalists have carved new dynasties, new kingdoms built upon concentration of control over material things through new uses of corporations, all undreamed of by the fathers. The whole structure of modern life has been impressed into this royal service. He says, it is natural and perhaps human that the privileged princes of these new economic dynasties, thirsting for power, reached out for control over government itself. They created a new despotism and wrapped it in the robes of legal sanction. In its service, new mercenaries sought to regiment the people, their labor, and their property. And as a result, the average man once more confronts the problem that faced the Minuteman. Franklin Roosevelt, July 27th, 1936. Well, let's wrap up the last sentence of the Declaration of Independence and then look at what happened to these men who said no to this economic and political royalism that had taken over their land. 29 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman with you here. The Friday before the 4th of July weekend, special program. What happened on the 4th of July? What's happening today? For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A new law went into effect in Virginia Thursday mandating the weekend. The legislation was originally designed to rid the state of so-called blue laws, setting aside Sunday as a day of rest. The new law threatens employers with a misdemeanor and fines for violation, and it gives employees forced to work on the weekend triple wages. Many Virginia lawmakers say they voted for the bill by mistake during a rush at the end of their last session. They say they plan to repeal the law when the state's General Assembly reconvenes next January.
Citizens in other countries who have their rights infringed upon by American companies can seek justice in U.S. courts, according to a new ruling from the Supreme Court. The case revolved around the Alien Torts Claim Act. The Bush administration argued that the law, instated in 1789, provided no standing for foreigners to recover damages, but a majority of the court disagreed. Valid claims allowed under the act include serious violations of human rights, including slavery, torture, and genocide. There was no corporate defendant in this case, but the Supreme Court's decision is good news for plaintiffs with human rights claims pending before lower courts. One such case involves the Unocal Corporation, which has been accused of working with the Burmese military to round up villagers and force them to help build an oil pipeline, roads, and company buildings.
Having tried all other tactics, the president of Communication Workers Local 1365 decided on Thursday to go on a hunger strike. He's hoping to force telecommunications company Lucent Technologies into paying an estimated $1 million in negotiated financial and pension benefits to 34 workers who will lose their jobs on July 16th. Lucent argues they only agreed to the extra benefits if they outsourced employees, so it says the workers will receive a standard termination package.
ATM users in Philadelphia may have to walk an extra block to make a withdrawal. More than 60 employees of Loomis Fargo have gone on strike and are refusing to service the machines. The strike is being held over contract negotiations and could last throughout the 4th of July weekend. Officials with PNC Bank, the company's largest client, have said that there are plans in place to make sure money is available to customers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least 5 firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Some bright morning when this life is over, I'll fly away to that home on God's celestial shore. I'll fly away.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 27 minutes before the hour. Special greetings to Zen Kimchi. Used to be Zen Pickle. Who 1 year ago today started hanging out in our chat room and discovered the program, and since then has moved to Korea to teach English, and has dropped into our chat room this afternoon. Great to see you there, Joe. And it's great. Okay, here we have the Declaration of Independence. These guys, the last paragraph, the last sentence of the Declaration of Independence. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Now, some people think that they were just using flowery language. We mutually pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. People who think it's too much trouble to get registered to vote and show up, right? Oh, those guys, they were just a bunch of rich white guys trying to make a country for a bunch of rich white guys, right? No. A dozen of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were politicians, physicians, or Protestant ministers. 11 of them were merchants. 9 were farmers. None of them were rich by today's standard. In fact, the first person to accumulate the equivalent in today's dollars of $1 million was a ship owner by the name of Silas somebody or other, I'm forgetting his last name, who did it in 1790, long after 1776. 11 were merchants, 9 were farmers. Ben Franklin was hard to define, although at the time he was referred to as a printer. Another one of the people who signed was a musician. One was a teacher. They ranged in age from their 20s to Ben Franklin, who was truly elderly. He was in his 80s. The average age was around 33, which was Thomas Jefferson's age at the time. These men were the most idealistic and determined among the colonists, while the conservatives of the day argued that America should remain a colony of England forever. These liberal radicals believed in both individual liberty and societal obligations. A nation must care for the lives of its own, guarantee liberty, and ensure its citizens happiness, a word that had never before appeared in any document of the founding of any nation in history. It's such a radical concept. When the signers wrote in the Declaration, "We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor," it was a simple statement of fact. The day they signed that document, each legally became a traitor and was sentenced to death for treason by the legal government that controlled their lands and homes. As Ben Franklin pointed out, they stood at a point of no return. He said, "Indeed, we must all hang together, otherwise we shall most assuredly hang separately." John Hancock, the wealthiest among them, signed his name large enough that the king, quote, could read his name without glasses and could now double the reward of £500 that had already been put on his head for sedition. Just 6 months later, Hancock would lose his newborn daughter to complications of childbirth arising from his wife's fleeing the oncoming British army. Although wealthy by the standards of the day, John Hancock would hardly qualify as rich by today's standards. He founded no dynasty and no foundations. Today dispense his money. His legacy is our nation. Another of the wealthiest of the signers was Thomas Nelson of Virginia, but a year after the signing, the British had seized his home and lands. When he and George Washington, Thomas Nelson became a member of the army, attacked the British in Nelson's hometown, and Nelson's home had been taken by the British as a headquarters, Nelson encouraged Washington to attack the Nelson homestead with cannons. The house was utterly destroyed. And after the war, Nelson, unable to repay loans he'd taken out against it, his home, and to help finance the revolution, lost his property and died in poverty at the age of 50. The wealthy Philadelphia merchant Robert Morris lost 150 ships at sea in the war, wiping out his small fortune. Signer William Ellery of Rhode Island similarly lost everything, as did Virginia's Carter Braxton and Benjamin Harrison, Pennsylvania's George Clymer, New York's Phillips Livingston, Georgia's Lyman Hall, and New Jersey's Francis Hopkinson. All of them became utterly destitute as a result of signing this document and died in poverty. The British destroyed New York's Francis Lewis's property and threw his wife into such a hellhole of a jail that she died 2 years later in jail. Three of South Carolina's four signers of the Declaration, Edward Rutledge, Thomas Heywood Jr., and Arthur Middleton, were captured by the British and held in a filthy, unheated prison and tortured for over a year before George Washington freed them in a prisoner exchange. John Hart, who signed the Declaration of Independence, was a farmer from New Jersey. No slaves, worked his own farm. Once he signed it, he became a traitor. His 13 children were scattered among sympathetic families to hide them from the British and from the conservative loyalists among the colonists. John Hart never again saw any of his 13 children. He died alone, racked with grief, 3 years later. Altogether, 17 of the signers were wiped out by the war they declared. New Jersey State Supreme Court Justice Richard Stockton took his wife and children into hiding after he signed the Declaration, but conservatives loyal to the Crown turned them in. He was so badly beaten and starved in the British prison that he died before the war was over. His home was looted, and his wife and his children lived the rest of their lives as paupers. Altogether, on that day that the Declaration was signed, altogether over the following few years, nine of the men in that room died, and four lost their children as a direct result of putting their names to the Declaration of Independence. Every single one, including Jefferson, had to flee his home. And after the war, 12 returned to find only rubble. After the war was over and the conservatives had fled to Canada and England, the survivors of the new American nation met to put into final form the legal structure of the nation they had just birthed. It was not to be a nation of cynical, selfish libertarians who believed the highest value was individual freedom and independence from society, or that the greatest motivator was greed. It was not to be a kingdom ruled by a warlord elite. It was not to be a theocracy where religious leaders made the rules. And it was not to be a feudal nation ruled by the rich. As Benjamin Franklin told Philadelphia's Mrs. Powell when she asked him what sort of nation had been conceived in the Constitutional Convention, he said to her, "It is a republic, madam, if you can keep it." consider what these men did that we will celebrate on Sunday and officially on Monday. And consider what you and I may do to maintain their legacy, to continue this extraordinary experiment that they started, the first time in the 7 to 8,000 years of the history of civilization that a people got together and said, we will rule ourselves. We, the people, will hold the rights. And even the government will not have rights. It will have only privileges, and they can be granted or revoked by us. Any institution, a corporation, a church, even a government, will have only privileges. It's a radical departure from the three historic forms of tyranny: kingdoms, theocracies, and feudal, you know, rule by the rich. In each one of these three cases, the rulers held the rights and the people held only privileges. A complete reversal. What can we do in honor of this great accomplishment? 17 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Michael in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Michael, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, you touched on something that has always just absolutely intrigued me, and that is the Tory militias in the South that were terrorizing the colonists who wanted to separate from England. And I always thought that, you know, it's interesting that conservatives today, if they were living back in that time, most conservatives anyways, especially the right-wing corporatists, would be supporting the British troops and, helping the British troops out.
Well, that was the big fight, Michael, was the most wealthy in America were not those who were in favor of separation from England. They had mostly very significant economic ties to England. James Beard talks in his book, The Rise of American Civilization, his 1928 masterpiece. He wrote it with his wife, Mary Beard, who is a very outspoken women's suffragette. He writes about the Johnsons of Upper New York State, who lived in a castle overlooking what's that river that goes down to New York City, and
Hudson.
Yeah, the Hudson River. Thank you, and that it was guarded by German mercenaries that he'd brought in and slaves and they lived in royalty. What he fails to mention is that after the war, the Johnsons fled to Canada. Most of the families of extraordinary wealth in the United States were absolutely opposed to the revolution. Absolutely opposed to the revolution.
Right, and I was reading it, and I don't mean to beat up on the South, but I wanted to expound on this. How was the Southern states, always a little vague on this, were most of the people in the Southern states opposed to independence?
You know, I don't think that you could say that the Southern states and the Northern states were necessarily that much different. From my read of it, I mean, the bottom line is that the majority of Americans were opposed to independence. The revolution.
Now that is my point.
Right.
I always found that intriguing.
Right. Right up and down the coast. I mean, there were cities like Boston and Philadelphia that were hotbeds of pro-independence activity, but. The movement for independence that culminated on July 4th of 1776 was probably represented, there was probably 10-20% real fanatic believers in it, and another 20% or so who were like, yeah, okay, I'll go along with this, and if the fight starts, I'll pick up my gun. But most historians, I mean, they didn't have pollsters back then, but most historians suggest that probably somewhere around 50 or 60% of the American electorate was opposed to the separation from England. Maybe
at least.
Would
you say the American Revolution was, would it be too far to say it was almost like another American Civil War?
Well, it very much was, and I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but Jimmy Carter has written a novel, I believe, that takes place in that time. I heard him discussing it, discussing the point that one of the things that most people don't know about the Revolutionary War is that it split family against family. That
right.
There were literally brothers hunting down and killing brothers because they were, had taken different sides on the war for independence, the War of 1776.
Really?
Yes, not the Civil War, the War of Independence. That it's
right,
cleaved,
I know. Wow,
it cleaved
I didn't know
families.
That.
Yeah, and that you know, this was probably much more predominant in the South than in the North. But this absolutely, it ripped apart families, it ripped apart fortunes, it ripped apart the nation. This was a long war. I think it took 7 years and a very, very difficult war. Of course, you know, once it got going, there was sort of a rally around effect, but there was also a reactive, you know, pullback effect. And people really were forced to choose sides. You were either with the British or you were with the Americans. Michael, I got to move along. Got a couple other calls
Thanks
here. You're welcome. 1-866-889-8894. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Good show. I don't know if there's an answer to this question or not. What if, come November, they steal the election again and it's as clear as it was in 2000 that they've stolen the election? What do we do?
Well, I think that given that now so many people have figured out what happened and how they did it in 2000, unless they come up with some ingenious new way that's going to, like this one, take us 6 months to figure it out and for somebody like Greg Palast to publicize it, I think all hell will break loose.
Yeah.
But, you know, time will tell. Time will tell.
That's almost as scary as them being in office.
I agree. I agree. It's not a good thing. 1-866-889-8894, Roberta in Ojo Caliente, New Mexico. Hey, Roberta.
Yes, sir. Well, today Roberta is your number one fan. I am so heartfeltly touched by your reading of the Declaration of Independence. I had reason to read it when I was studying my antique encyclopedias the other day, and it brought me to tears, and also some anger, because I too saw how the parallel between the grievances of the King George III to the many here on this continent and the present time. And you know, the Durants pretty much document that King George III was half insane, if not imbecilic. And so there are many parallels. Power does corrupt, and so does great wealth.
Yeah.
But I am so touched by your reading of that. But
thank you very much, Roberta.
And I think your gift to the many.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner, bringing you today's feature story. Walmart faces the largest class action lawsuit in U.S. history. A 3-year-old sex discrimination suit against Walmart has been certified as class action. This means the nation's largest retailer is now the defendant in the nation's largest private civil rights case. More from Kalia Ramirez in Berkeley, California.
The suit says the giant retailer is discriminating against women in pay and promotions and creating a demeaning atmosphere for women workers. The class certification makes the 6 named plaintiffs in Dukes versus Walmart stores representatives of the interests of a class of about 1.6 million women who have worked at Walmart or Sam's Club in the United States at any time since December 26, 1998. Brad Seligman of the Berkeley-based Impact Fund is the plaintiff's lead attorney. He says class action status means Walmart cannot afford to ignore this lawsuit.
The jury's judgment is going to affect the rights of 1.6 or more million women, which means Walmart is not going to be dealing with little pinpricks from a judgment here, from an individual, or a judgment there. They're facing the challenge to their whole company.
When the decision was announced, Walmart spokeswoman Mona Williams told Associated Press that the retailer had recently announced a new job classification and pay structure for its hourly workers. Seligman says he doesn't know the details of the change, but that the sex discrimination suit is spurring Walmart to action, on a public relations level at least.
Their commercials have totally changed, haven't they? They're now the Rainbow Coalition works at Walmart. Walmart clearly felt it had to make some changes to blunt what it anticipated was going to be.
Workers. Seligman says he doesn't know the details of the change, but that the sex discrimination suit is spurring Walmart to action, on a public relations level at least.
Their commercials have totally changed, haven't they? They're now the Rainbow Coalition works at Walmart. Walmart clearly felt it had to make some changes to blunt what it anticipated was going to be the storm of negative publicity, which we've seen happen.
Walmart wants to appeal the class certification. Meanwhile, Seligman says the plaintiffs would like a jury trial next year. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Kellya.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Love me 2 times, baby. Love me twice today.
And welcome.
His own demise, where the Congressional Black Caucus was trying to get one senator to sign, which could have shifted the whole thing. So my question is, where's the Democratic Party? Not that I'm agreeing, but in other words...
Well, this is, Deborah, you're absolutely right. And this is why for 2 years now on this radio program, and long before that in my writings, I have been encouraging Americans to infiltrate, participate with, and take back over the Democratic Party. And you can maintain your membership at the Green Party and do that at the same time, I mean, you know, or any other party for that matter.
But my question is, when they were pleading to have one senator sign so they could bring this to the floor and take back the election, we didn't have Kennedy sign it, we didn't have Kerry sign it.
Well, see, those folks didn't, they just honestly, I think, didn't know what Greg Palast had report. I mean, at that point, Greg Palast hadn't done his report on BBC about the theft of the vote. It took him several months to uncover that stuff. Jeb Bush had hidden very deeply And very successfully, him and Catherine Harris had very successfully hidden their crime. And make no doubt about it, it was a crime. Christopher, I'm sorry, Deborah, I got to move along.
We got one more call here,
but thanks for the call. Christopher in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Christopher, what's up? Got about a half a minute left here.
Sure. I'm absolutely fascinated. I thought I'd actually read a lot of history, but I didn't know that that 60% of the people actually would have opposed separation from England. And it's fascinating to sort of contemplate what a plebiscite would have done under those circumstances.
Yeah. Fortunately, there wasn't one.
No kidding.
They just started their war. They said, that's enough. We're taking over. Sort of like, you know, what the Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Cheney bunch have done.
My mind. That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Yeah, and I think it's time for us to do the same thing, to say, you know, enough. We want our country back. Christopher, thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program here with you. Truth and common sense in broadcasting for a change.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. A new law went into effect in Virginia Thursday mandating the weekend. The legislation was originally designed to rid the state of so-called blue laws setting aside Sunday as a day of rest. The new law threatens employers with a misdemeanor and fines for violation, and it gives employees forced to work on the weekend triple wages. Many Virginia lawmakers say they voted for the bill by mistake during a rush at the end of their last session. They say they plan to repeal the law when the state's General Assembly reconvenes next January.
Citizens in other countries who have their rights infringed upon by American companies can seek justice in U.S. courts, according to a new ruling from the Supreme Court. The case revolved around the Alien Tort Claim Act. The Bush administration argued that the law, instated in 1789, provided no standing for foreigners to recover damages, but a majority of the court disagreed. Valid claims allowed under the act include serious violations of human rights, including slavery, torture, and genocide. There was no corporate defendant in this case, but the Supreme Court's decision is good news for plaintiffs with human rights claims pending before lower courts. One such case involves the Unocal Corporation, which has been accused of working with the Burmese military to round up villagers and force them to help build an oil pipeline, roads, and company buildings.
Having tried all other tactics, the president of Communication Workers Local 1365 decided on Thursday to go on a hunger strike. He's hoping to force telecommunications company Lucent Technologies into paying an estimated $1 million in negotiated financial and pension benefits to 34 workers who will lose their jobs on July 16th. Lucent argues they only agreed to the extra benefits if they outsourced employees, so it says the workers will receive a standard termination package.
ATM users in Philadelphia may have to walk an extra block to make a withdrawal. More than 60 employees of Loomis Fargo have gone on strike and are refusing to service the machines. The strike is being held over contract negotiations and could last throughout the 4th of July weekend. officials with PNC
will receive a standard termination package.
ATM users in Philadelphia may have to walk an extra block to make a withdrawal. More than 60 employees of Loomis Fargo have gone on strike and are refusing to service the machines. The strike is being held over contract negotiations and could last throughout the 4th of July weekend. Officials with PNC Bank, the company's largest client, have said that there are plans in place to make sure money is available to customers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses...
Grab your BS detector. That's what consumers, farmers, environmentalists, and others did when Bush's Agriculture Department suddenly issued four new guidelines on what can and cannot be labeled as organic. Not to worry, said a USDA spokeswoman. They are just clarifications. They just explain what's enforceable. BS. All four are slick stinkers that pollute the very meaning of organic. The supposedly innocuous clarifications, which were pushed by agribusiness corporations that fund Bush's political campaigns, would allow pesticides, animal drugs, sex hormones, antibiotics, and toxic fish meal to be used to produce crops, meat, milk, and other foods we buy that are labeled organic. In other words, the Bushites would turn the organic label into a legalized fraud. To add to the deception, the Ag Department tried to sneak these agribusiness changes into law without allowing any public comment, as required by law. I don't know who they thought they were fooling, but it damn sure wasn't the people. Thousands of phone calls, emails, faxes, and petitions poured into USDA. So many calls, for example, that besieged ag officials called the Organic Consumers Association and begged it to tell its supporters to stop calling. Also, small organic businesses and the Organic Trade Association prepared a lawsuit against this anti-democratic power play. It took less than a month for the Bushites to cry uncle. Forced to the wall by the public outrage, Bush's Ag Secretary has abruptly rescinded all four clarifications, and for the moment, the integrity of our organic label has been preserved. This is Jim Hightower saying, but keep your BS detectors at the ready, for they won't stop trying to sneak ever slicker and stinkier ag biz schemes past us.
You think I'd be behind some Bush's phases, maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus and keeping you comfy.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone.
I'm an expert. You're on the job. Don't even think about it, Doug.
Our air conditioners with Puron refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound with a 10-year limited warranty. See dealer for details.
Nothing can stop my dedication. Heat waves, rain, your kid's soccer ball. Ouch. I'm fine, really.
No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. Carrier, turn to the experts.
Now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you kind of get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time. Uh-oh. All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. It's the 4th of July weekend, Friday the 2nd of July. What is the state of American democracy? Here now, lo, these many years later. So what, 128 years? 228 years since 1776, I believe. I should sit down and do the math, right? Well, we just got a copy of the felon list from the Division of Elections in Florida. It was just released by court order. And Gordon Hartman, Kevin Hartman, Helen Hartman, Conrad Hartman, Jacqueline Hartman, and Cheryl Hartman are all to be bounced off the list. And Cheryl actually spells her name with two N's on it, just like mine. I wonder. You know, it's going to be interesting to see now that this thing is public what's going to happen with this. Because this, keep in mind, when a minority group, a group like the conservatives, who represent the thought shared by only a minority of Americans, perhaps as few as 15 or 20% of Americans, and of those who really understand the conservative agenda, the corporatist agenda, I think you could safely argue that probably fewer than 5% of Americans truly share their values. That when a minority group has power and wants to hold on to power, the number one thing they want to do is smash democratic institutions. And so we're seeing all these things. You're seeing another vote purge in Florida. You're seeing legislation introduced yesterday into the House of Representatives and the Senate that would require people, when they show up to vote, to present their driver's license, plus their birth certificate or their passport. I mean, how many people even know where that stuff is stashed, right? And on it goes. I mean, it's like and billionaires giving money to Ralph Nader, Republican billionaires who historically had heavily funded George W. Bush. It's like anything to harm the will of the people, we the people. I just see this as a disaster. I want to share a quick poem with you here by Calvin Trillin. He was on The Daily Show a couple days ago. We have his book. I have a copy of his book, which is called Obliviously He Sails. It's got a picture of George W. on the cover, which actually the title is from another poem that Trillin had written, which was about George W. Graduating from college, and the rhyme was Obliviously He Sails with Marks Not Quite As Good As Quails. But anyhow, here's the November 3rd, 2003, Calvin Trillin published this poem, Just Speculating. Loose 60 morals, Gingrich said, was where our troubles lay. Then Newt himself was bound to have a tendency to stray. Rush Limbaugh has been hooked on pills while Bennett's hooked on slots. Do all the right-wing morals police have copybooks with blots? Does Falwell have a floozy, say? Does Ashcroft, you suppose, get home from church and swiftly snort some white stuff up his nose? Does Robertson crave demon rum? Does Cheney make clerks promise to hide the fact that he's renting tapes last viewed by Clarence Thomas? Just Speculating by Calvin Trillin. Our poem for the day. 11 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you would like to participate in our program. What a difference a year makes. By the way, today is 1 year from, it was a year ago today that George W. Bush said, bring them on. We got the force. We got. When I was a kid, my mother, who has a bachelor's degree in English, right, my mother would say, God is German for God. That's it. You know, if you want to get technical, it means acquired, but it doesn't mean have. Okay. We got the force necessary to deal with the security situation, George W. Bush. And today, what do we see? The Army plans to involuntarily call up thousands of reservists, people who actually aren't technically reservists. They've served their time and they've left. In many cases for years. But see, there's this little catch in the contract that most people didn't read that says that if you don't serve 8 years, and most people sign up for, you know, a 2-year, 3-year, 4-year stint. If you don't serve 8 years, then any time during the 8 years after you first signed up, you can be called back involuntarily. And that's what they're doing, this backdoor draft. 1-866-889-8894. Doug in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Doug, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. Just out of curiosity, I believe I know the reason why, but why are people that are convicted of minor felonies not allowed to vote?
Well, there's two ways you can spin that, or two theories. The conservative theory that they put forth, the argument that's put forth to the people, is that these people have demonstrated that they are not willing to play by society's rules. They can't be trusted. They're not good people. Blah-de, 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 blah, fill in the blanks. And therefore, we really don't want them to be part of our electoral process. They forfeit their right to be members of our society, full members of our society, when they've committed their crime. Now, that's a notion that is only held by a few states. I don't know the exact number of states that do not allow convicted and released felons to vote. I don't think any state allows people who are in prison to vote.
We have some of those felons in office or in administrative positions in the government?
Well,
right now?
George W. Bush is the first president of the United States to have been elected president of the United States after having been convicted of a crime. But the crime that he was convicted of was drunk driving. And
the laws back then weren't as strict as they
are. I don't know if that was a felony conviction or some sort of, you know, high level misdemeanor. I frankly don't know, and I don't know how Texas handled it back then. That's an interesting question. But the real reason, I mean, you know, I just gave you the conservative rationalization. The real reason that they don't want these folks to vote is that, you know, I mean, any rational person, I think, would say, hey, if we have a democracy, and a democracy is all about we the people and people are getting involved, somebody screws up, they commit a crime, they go to jail, they pay their time, they have served their debt to society. We're going to give them another chance. I mean, that's the whole point of our criminal justice system. We're going to bring them back into society, and assuming that they continue to behave themselves and become active contributors to society, we're going to give them back their rights. But the conservatives are concerned that the majority of people who have been on the inside in the criminal justice system and seen the bizarre nature of conservative politics, like the so-called drug war, you know, war on drugs,
right,
are not going to vote Republican. They're going to vote Democratic. In fact, about half of all the people in prison in the United States right now are there for pot, you know, or various drug offenses. And by and large, those are not people who are going to embrace the Republicans and their war on drugs. And so really what this is a partisan attempt to reduce the number of Democratic voters, period.
Do you know of anybody in the House of Representatives or in the Senate right now that is trying to reverse this?
Well, this is something that's done on a state-by-state basis. So it would have to be, the battle would have to be fought in each individual state. Do you know in New Mexico whether a felon after release from prison can vote?
I do know that there's a few people that I know that are actually advocating the state Senate and the state House of Representatives here in New Mexico in reversing the federal no vote clause.
It's not federal, though. I'm quite sure.
For the state.
Yeah, it's state.
No vote.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know how far they've gotten. I haven't talked to them in a little bit.
Yeah, so New Mexico is just like Florida. Well, I would encourage you to get active in that, because I really believe that, you know, once somebody has served their debt to society, that they should have a right to participate in the society. I mean, it's going to make them feel like they're active participants in society. It's going to make them more likely to be active participants. There's a lot of good stuff that comes out of letting people participate in democracy after they have made a mistake and paid for it, and, you know, appropriately paid for it. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you, Doug. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Jonathan in Palm Desert, California is on the line. Hey, Jonathan, what's up?
Hi there. I heard you talking in the previous hour to a caller about the Congressional Black Congress in Fahrenheit 9/11, not receiving a single senator.
The Black Caucus, yes.
Yes. I had been listening to the radio show that comes right after yours on radiopower.org.
Mm-hmm.
It's a show called Radio Inside Scoop, which is hosted by a former congressional lawyer for Barney Frank.
Mark Levine, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. That's the one.
Yeah.
And on Monday, he was pointing out that it was his brief, actually, that the Congressional Black Caucus was putting forward.
Oh,
and the reason he had been told was twofold, actually, why the senators weren't voting for it. The first reason was that because the Senate was split 50-50, with the deciding vote being Gore, and the House was Republican-controlled, that if indeed it was passed and everyone had a vote on it and was split down party lines, The decision, I think, would then go to the executive office of the state in question, which would have been Florida.
Mm.
So that would have been
so
Jeb Bush.
The Republicans would have won anyway.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So why? So why have blood all over the floor?
Right. Yeah. And the other thing is that because the Republicans didn't want to kind of bring it out into the light, they made a deal with the Democrats at the time that because they were going to control both the House and the Senate, the Democrats would have very little say in any of the committee meetings that would have been put together.
Right.
So they offered the Democrats a 50-50 representation on those committees if they did not support the resolution.
Oh, that's very interesting. Did they follow through on that promise?
To my knowledge, they did, but it was sort of rendered moot after Jeffords defected.
Right, and since then, they certainly haven't. I mean, you know, all of the
right.
congressional committee
after the midterm elections, they got control of both of them, and then just pretty much went nuts.
Yeah. You're speaking gently there, Jonathan. They didn't go. They went fascistic. I mean, you know, it's a.
Well, yeah. It's you know, that's just me.
Yeah, it was. This is just amazing the tack. I mean, you've got so many pieces of legislation stacked up right now, where you actually have enough co-sponsors for the bill to actually have it pass. I mean, both Republicans and Democrats, for example, Rush Holt's bill that all voting machines have to produce a paper ballot. He has
right.
more co-sponsors than would be necessary to have a majority a pass. You know, he's got more than half the members of Congress signed on to this thing, and Tom DeLay won't let it out of committee, so it cannot
right.
be voted on.
Yeah, it's
and
ridiculous.
It's one of, you know, literally thousands of examples. You know, Bernie Sanders was talking about another one last week about a rider that they wanted to put on the energy bill to designate $60 million for research into alternative energy sources. And the Republicans are like, nope, we're going to give $18 billion in welfare to the oil companies, but no $60 million to the solar industry. Ain't going to happen.
Right.
Jonathan, go ahead.
Okay. Just check out Monday's show on RadioInsideScoop.org or White Rose Society for Radio Inside Scoop.
Okay, great.
That'll have the information direct from the horse's mouth.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jonathan. I appreciate your sharing your wisdom with us and where you learned it from. Great. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Stay tuned.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
My answer is bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
All that you touch and all that you see, all that you taste, all you feel.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 minutes past the hour. Now coming up on 25 minutes past the hour. Interesting events in Afghanistan and Iraq. On this one-year anniversary of George W. Bush saying, bring them on. We'll get into that in just a minute. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mary in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Mary, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I have a question for you. I feel like I must be missing something here. Maybe you can enlighten me. I don't understand how it is that in the list of crimes against Saddam Hussein, one of the crimes he's charged with is the invasion of Kuwait. I guess that would be called preemptive attack.
Yeah.
And how come everyone doesn't seem to coordinate? Why is he being charged with the crime for that when we aren't being charged with the crime for invading Iraq?
Yeah, well, it is kind of fascinating that they're saying to him, you know, it's against the law to invade another country. By the way, pay no attention to the fact that we invaded you.
Exactly. I just think it's very odd that there hasn't been anybody speaking out about that. Maybe there will be, but anyway.
Well, see, they're gonna take it beyond the invasion of Iraq. They're gonna say he invaded Kuwait and his men robbed, raped, and pillaged, and they threw baby incubators on the floor. And they'll get that daughter of the former Kuwaiti ambassador to the United States to tell her lie again. And, I thought Saddam's response was interesting. He Kuwait has always been part of Iraq, and we were just taking it back. So, and of course, you know, there's the April Gillespie story, which Joe Wilson tells us, and he knows her, knew her, and he was in that part of the world at the time. Apparently, he was the U.S. envoy to Baghdad, that it's not quite that way, that April Gillespie didn't actually tell Saddam, go ahead and do it. But, I'm not sure to what extent. I just don't know. Don't know. But the reality is that I would be very, very surprised if Saddam had not somehow solicited permission from the United States, because we had been one of his biggest patrons. I mean, we had supplied so much of his military. We had certainly supplied him with the mustard gas and sarin and nerve gas and whatnot that he used up north. And, of course, there are also a lot of reports that the people who died in that, the Kurds who died in that village up north, didn't die as a result of Saddam going in and trying to gas them. They died as a result of a battle between Iraq and Iran. And they basically just got in the middle. You know, the battle moved around, and there they were. Not, which is not to say that Saddam is a good guy. I mean,
no,
it's,
I agree. I didn't mean to say that either. And I didn't mean to say that I approved of his invading Kuwait. But I just think it's an interesting parallel that they can be so outrageous as to say that when and have no one question it. So anyway, thanks, Tom.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot for calling, Mary. Good to hear from you. It's going to be interesting to see how they play this trial out, because and there's been a lot of speculation in the press in the last couple of days about, you know, is this going to give a bounce to George?
I got rid of a dictator. Now I'm going to show you how nasty he was.
And cause Americans to kind of slowly recalibrate. You know, it's like, you know, we went to war against Hitler. Well, Hitler declared war on us first, so we had to go to war against him, I suppose you could say. But there were many Americans, primarily the Republicans, who at the time were arguing, Hitler represents no threat to us. You know, he's a threat to Spain, he's a threat to France, he's a threat to Italy, he's a threat to Norway, he's a threat to the Netherlands, he's a threat to Poland, he's a threat to Russia, but he represents no threat to us. We've got no dog in this fight. So let's stay out of there. And it's interesting time. So it's going to be interesting to see if by having some kind of a show trial before the election, and I suspect they're going to be pushing for this. We're getting ambiguous responses about when it's going to happen. Bush is going to get the bounce where people go, just as they did after World War II. Well, he really was a terrible guy, and boy, what a great thing we went in and got him. Or is it going to remind people of the fact that we were lied into a war? I don't know. 29 minutes past the hour.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. A new law went into effect in Virginia Thursday mandating the weekend. The legislation was originally designed to rid the state of so-called blue laws, setting aside Sunday as a day of rest. The new law threatens employers with a misdemeanor and fines for violation, and it gives employees forced to work on the weekend triple wages. Many Virginia lawmakers say they voted for the bill by mistake during a rush at the end of their last session. They say they plan to repeal the law when the state's General Assembly reconvenes next January.
Citizens in other countries who have their rights infringed upon by American companies can seek justice in U.S. courts, according to a new ruling from the Supreme Court. The case revolved around the Alien Tort Claim Act. The Bush administration argued that the law, instated in 1789, provided no standing for foreigners to recover damages, but a majority of the court disagreed. Valid claims allowed under the act include serious violations of human rights, including slavery, torture, and genocide. There was no corporate defendant in this case, but the Supreme Court's decision is good news for plaintiffs with human rights claims pending before lower courts. One such case involves the Unocal Corporation, which has been accused of working with the Burmese military to round up villagers and force them to help build an oil pipeline, roads, and company buildings.
Having tried all other tactics, the president of Communication Workers Local 1365 decided on Thursday to go on a hunger strike. He's hoping to force telecommunications company Lucent Technologies into paying an estimated $1 million in negotiated financial and pension benefits to 34 workers who will lose their jobs on July 16th. Lucent argues they only agreed to the extra benefits if they outsourced employees, so it says the workers will receive a standard termination package.
ATM users in Philadelphia may have to walk an extra block to make a withdrawal. More than 60 employees of Loomis Fargo have gone on strike and are refusing to service the machines. The strike is being held over contract negotiations and could last throughout the 4th of July weekend. Officials with PNC Bank, the company's largest client, have said that there are plans in place to make sure money is available to customers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And if you're not in our chat room right now, you are missing. This is outrageous. Marion, one of our one of the regular folks who shares time with us, talking. It's no coincidence that the bombers, that the guys, you know, flew those airplanes into the buildings on 9/11 were trained in Florida. You know, and then you got the fact that Florida brought us George W. Bush, and then you got the fact that Florida is the gateway to Cuba. And the bottom line here is that I think that there's a consensus forming in the chat room that we should invade Florida. That it's the next big threat. It certainly is being run like a banana republic by Jeb Bush. It's remarkable. If you want to get to our chat room, go to TomHartman.com. And right up at the top in the middle is a live chat button. And you click that, it'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. And if you don't immediately get in, it means that you you don't have a cookie or whatever for being a member of CompuServe or AOL. And if you do, or if it asks you for a screen name and password, if you have a CompuServe account or an AOL account, just type it in and boom, you're in. And if you don't have a CompuServe or AOL account, then you can simply sign up for one right there online, and you don't have to give them a credit card or anything. There's no cost for it. And to the best of my knowledge, and I'm quite certain about this because there was just a big scandal about it about a year ago, they don't spam you or anything. So anyhow, you give them your email address and a little bit of information, and poof, you've got an account and you are in. And then once you get into the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, click the chat button and go to room number 7, as I recall. It's called the Tom Hartman Radio Show Room. And there you will find folks from South Korea to Florida to Oklahoma at this moment having a conversation. And I occasionally jump in, mostly just read it. But Narlodia says, AOL sold my email address to spammers. Actually, there was a guy who just a couple of weeks ago got busted for selling the AOL database to spammers. So I don't think it was AOL. It might have been him, but he's in jail now. So Anyhow, it was actually a fairly good-sized story in the news. 24 minutes before the hour here. Yesterday, Vice President Dick Cheney, back to the State of the Union here we are. You know, this country that was brought into being in 1776 on this weekend. 1776. Today is probably the anniversary of the date that Adams and I believe it was George Mason, it may have been John Jay, and Ben Franklin were sitting down with Thomas Jefferson's finished first draft of the Declaration of Independence and editing it. And, making their little changes. In some ways, they tightened it up very nicely. Some of their other edits are a little more controversial in my mind, and I know that Jefferson objected to them. He wrote about it years later, but anyhow, it is what it is, and it is a brilliant document. So what is the state of this nation which our founders birthed this weekend? And our adventures around the world, you know, you'll recall George Washington in his farewell address said, please avoid foreign entanglements. And here we are. So yesterday, Vice President Dick Cheney, this from the Center for American Progress, the Progress Report, claimed,
America is safer and the world is more secure because Iraq and Afghanistan are now partners in the struggle against terror instead of sanctuaries for terrorist networks.
Well, setting Iraq aside, which is far from one and pretty clearly a sanctuary for terrorist networks that didn't exist there before. Setting that aside, let's just look at Afghanistan. That war is also far from won. This administration diverted precious resources from the war in Afghanistan to a voluntary war in Iraq. As a result, according now to this new book from Anonymous, from this high-ranking, senior-level CIA official, a book vetted by George Tenet and allowed to be published by the CIA. As a result, al-Qaeda and the Taliban remain strong, remain dangerous, and the country of Afghanistan is entrenched in ongoing violence. It's going to be a long, hard slog to democracy in Afghanistan. The Taliban, for example, is on the rebound. Reuters reports Taliban guerrillas kidnapped and killed 16 people in an Afghan province after finding them with voter registration cards for the country's September elections, officials said Sunday. It's different in its scope. Kidnapping and killing is a little different than saying we should have a poll tax, or you can't vote if you're a felon, or... you can't vote if you don't show your birth certificate. But, you know, it is the kind of conservative way. I mean, the Taliban is a very conservative bunch, ruled by an elite minority. They don't like the idea of lots and lots of people participating in an election.
How dare they think that they can have democracy? What? Democracy? No. We're not going to do that.
The latest attacks, the Center for American Progress reports, David Sirota. The latest attacks are a reminder of the need for more international troops, especially in the run-up to the election, and represent, according to Reuters, further setbacks for U.S.-led efforts to bring peace to Afghanistan, a country President George Bush has described as the role model for Iraq. Well, if Afghanistan is the role model for Iraq, then we're in trouble. This week, the Taliban in Afghanistan took credit for slitting the throat of a cleric who was promoting Christianity. This was a Muslim cleric. He was, let's say, tolerant of Christianity. Last November, the president prematurely proclaimed, we have, quote,
we've put the Taliban out of business forever.
Sorry, George. Poor, deluded George. In fact, a video has surfaced which may show an al-Qaeda training camp currently running in Afghanistan. most likely near the Pakistani border. The New York Times reports this could, quote, be the first evidence that al-Qaeda has regrouped sufficiently to carry out training operations inside Afghanistan or Pakistan since the United States toppled the Taliban in 2001. End quote. They're back! And they're upset! The war in Iraq has drained critical resources and attention from the situation in Afghanistan, which is, after all, where Osama bin Laden was hanging out. A report by the International Institute for Strategic Studies, a paper published by the Army War College, and a new book by a CIA terror expert all agree that instead of aiding the fight against terrorism, the war in Iraq instead helped al-Qaeda. I'm sure you've seen that quote from the new book, Imperial Hubris, where he says, you know, this is the greatest gift that Osama bin Laden could have asked for, was to have the United States invade a sovereign Arab nation, Iraq. It has been a recruiting tool that he has used from the Philippines to the Americas. This claim is backed up, says the Center for American Progress, by revised data in the latest report on terrorism by the State Department, which shows terrorist attacks last year were at a 20-year high. The public is beginning to realize this. The new CNN Gallup USA Today poll found 55% of Americans surveyed now say the war has increased, this being the war in Iraq, has increased U.S. vulnerability to terrorism. Now, in the midst of this, Afghanistan is trying to have elections. They really, you know, Karzai, Hamid Karzai, former UNICAL consultant, UNICAL, of course, building the pipeline across Afghanistan now, tried to in the 1990s, unsuccessfully. But Hamid Karzai, I think, I may be wrong. I don't know. Maybe I'm giving the guy too much credit. I don't know him personally. But I think that he really does want to have elections, does want to have a more legitimate government, one that's not viewed as a U.S. puppet, and one that actually democratically represents the will of the Afghan people. And I think that he's trying to make that happen. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on that. I really am. It may be it may end up being a very corrupt government. It may end up being in bed with some oil company. I mean, who knows? I mean, there's lots of possibilities. But nonetheless, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. The problem is that only about half of the 10 million eligible voters in Afghanistan have been registered to vote. And even beyond this, they're not really even sure how many seats should be in parliament because that's based on a census, and they haven't been able to do the census for the same reason they haven't been able to register voters, because there's still a war going on there. I mean, you got warlords fighting against warlords. You got poppy growers, Afghanistan now, this year, producing the largest poppy crop in the history of the world. Not just for Afghanistan, but for any nation. Fueling an explosion in ultra-cheap heroin in Europe and the United States. And money has something to do with this. According to a UN representative in Kabul, Afghanistan is facing a $60 million shortfall in the funds needed for presidential and parliamentary elections. And I doubt they're going to get that money from George W. from this administration. What? You're trying to create a democracy? $60 million? No, I don't think we can afford that. Another billion for Iraq, Ralph. Oh, I got to make sure that Halliburton gets their paychecks this week. No, I'm sorry, Mr. Karzai. That $60 million, no, you can't have that. Well, yes, I realize it's only, 0.6% of... did you send that billion this week over there to Iraq? Yes, I realize. Well, anyway, you get the point. Ongoing insecurity in Afghanistan remains a crucial problem. Afghan President Hamid Karzai pleaded with NATO last month to, accelerate deployment of troops to his country to boost security during September's elections, saying, quote, I would like to help you, please come. Come sooner than September. Today's Financial Times reports, however, that NATO is planning to send far fewer troops than Afghanistan actually needs. The White House is to blame for some of this reluctance to help. Mark Schneider, senior vice president of the International Crisis Group, says that, quote, while the Bush administration now backs the expansion of NATO forces in Afghanistan, residual displeasure among NATO states over U.S. action in Iraq has made getting action more difficult. Well, George has stuck his foot in it again. 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to share your thoughts with us on this. I would love to hear from you. Sheila in Denver, in fact, is on the line. Hey, Sheila, what's up?
I was just going to tell you that Cheney got booed at a baseball game Tuesday night, New York Yankees game.
Yeah.
During the seventh inning stretch, they were playing God Bless America, and they had the flag waving on the Jumbotron. They had the flag waving in the wind. They pan over to Cheney's face, and the people booed.
Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? Now, Bob Novak claims that the same thing happened to Bill Clinton at some point. I saw a reference to this on Crossfire. And Paul Begala, who was there, says he has no recollection of it. I'm not sure that I trust Novak as a journalist. But, you know, it's possible. But in any case, I think there's a reason why these guys are not showing their faces in public. I mean, they're only showing up for fundraisers with multimillionaires. They have these free speech zones that they haul people off to with barbed wire fences and cops with guns and stuff. They are not conducting the people's business. They are not answerable. They don't believe that they're answerable to we the people. There is an arrogance and an elitism among this administration that in my lifetime I have no recollection of. I mean, it's right up there with the kind of behavior that you see literally from despots and dictators in other nations in my mind. So, Sheila, thanks for identifying that, sharing that story with us.
Yeah, thanks. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too. Happy 4th of July, and good fireworks to you if you're going to have them. Here in Vermont, it's a big deal. You know, go see the fireworks. And whenever we get back, our cats all act like they have post-traumatic stress disorder. I wonder, which reminds me of the very, very high number of our troops who may be so shaken by their experiences. 1 in 5 now, they're suggesting, of the returning troops is carrying now a classifiable mental illness, as in, you know, serious emotional/mental damage, post-traumatic stress disorder as a consequence of what they did, what they saw, or what they saw being done. American commanders will risk launching high-profile military actions and our targets in Iraq, even if they go directly against the wishes of the new Iraqi government, says a senior U.S. general. Sovereignty? We don't need no stinking sovereignty, says Lieutenant General Thomas Metz, the second most senior American officer in Iraq. Actually, that's not a quote from him. It's a quote from an old Mel Brooks movie. But yeah, the forces tactical operations commanders of the U.S. military was prepared to risk provoking friction with the new government. His frank admission just 2 days after sovereignty was handed back to the Iraqis cuts to the heart of a likely source of significant political disagreement between the fledgling government and the U.S. military, according to this article in today's The Guardian by Rory McCarthy in Baghdad. Yeah, sovereignty? Sovereignty? You think you've got sovereignty? Ha ha, good luck, buddy. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. Results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Daddy, who's Pat Riot?
Pat Riot? I never heard of him.
Is he an actor?
What do you mean, honey?
Well, it says here the Pat Riot Act is good for our country.
No. It's a patriot. Patriot. It means loving our country.
What's a Patriot Act like?
The Patriot Act lets the government search for terrorists, bad guys who might want to hurt us.
Us?
No, not you or me, don't worry. But some Americans, I suppose, like when the buildings fell down.
But does the Patriot Act think we're terrorists?
Of course not, honey. Why?
Well, I thought it said that some people get together because they disagree with the government. That could be something terrorism. Here, how do you pronounce that, Daddy?
Domestic terrorism. Lawful assembly is domestic terrorism? Can't say that. Huh. I guess it does.
What's that mean?
Well, I suppose it could mean that meeting that your teacher went to about repealing the Patriot Act could be thought of as domestic terrorism.
Hey, I've got it. What if we make it illegal to give homework and make it illegal for teachers and parents to meet to protest not giving homework?
Come on, honey.
Well, it's kind of the same thing, isn't it? My teacher's not a terrorist.
No, I don't think so.
Are we really free if we're being watched all the time? Really?
Well, it may not seem like it, but...
Then why? People can't love our country if they want to take our freedoms away, can they?
I don't know.
Sounds like we ought to go to the next repeal meeting, Daddy.
Oh, no. Well, maybe. I don't know.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Four people were killed last night when a U.S. warplane fired a missile into a house in Fallujah. Don't you find it fascinating? I find this particularly interesting that Fallujah is not much in the news anymore. The reason, of course, being that there are no reporters there. Why are there no reporters there? Because it has been, well, you'll recall there was that, you know, battle and, you know, the four U.S. mercenaries, or contractors, were killed and strung up, and so we were going to punish them, and it looked like it was going to be a big mess, and a lot of, you know, some 600 civilians died. And finally they brought in a former general from Saddam's army and said, okay, can you go in and clean this thing up? Because if you can, and he went in and took over, and he's been there ever since, and we have not, and things have changed a little. Four people were killed last night when a U.S. warplane fired a missile into a house in Fallujah. That's because we have to do it from the air. 10 people were injured in the blast. The U.S. military said it was an attack on the suspected hideout of Zaqawi. But what people forget is that, you know, this here from the Associated Press. With U.S. Marines gone, Fallujah resembles an Islamic mini-state. Anyone caught selling alcohol is flogged and paraded in the city. Men are encouraged to grow beards, and barbers are warned against giving Western-style haircuts. After all the blood that was shed and the lives that were lost, we shall only accept God's law in Fallujah, says cleric Abdul Kutar el-Awsawi, offering a glimpse into what a future Iraq might be like as the U.S.-led occupation draws to a close. Sunday, for example, scores of masked mujahideen shouting Allahu Akbar, or God is great, paraded four men stripped to their underpants atop the back of a pickup truck that drove throughout the city. Their backs were bleeding from 80 lashes they had received as punishment for selling alcohol. That's Fallujah. Yeah, we're bringing democracy to them real quick, aren't we? It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom Hartman here with you. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the world, and to Ben for the Archives of White Rose Society, to Michael Toth for our archives at TomHartman.com. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to Jay for composing and playing the music that you're hearing now, our theme music. And thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics. And thanks to you for showing up. We'll see you next week. Happy weekend. Happy 4th of July weekend.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading